Hospitalitychain.com, the world's first online hub designed for the hospitality, culinary, and catering industry. From leading food and beverage brands to professional food service equipment, Hospitalitychain.com makes sourcing simple. Search, select, buy direct, and save all in one global marketplace.
I didn't want people's lives to be on the line for my job. So I was going to go into aeronautical engineering. Said no, that was a little too much stress. So I went to food service, which isn't stressful at all, right?
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Fell in the Food Podcast. I'm your host, Chef Jeff Fell. With me today is Michael Smith of Ramen King. And this is going to be an amazing conversation. We met via LinkedIn, 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago now?
Yeah.
And just your energy is infectious. Your hustle, your grind, your work ethic, I can see it all over. Let's maybe start with, you know, you've done a lot of things in your past, from chef, hospitality leader, inventor. You know, for those that don't know your story or who you are, you know, how do you usually introduce yourself? Let us know how you fell into food.
Well, I grew up in Southern Ohio, in Marietta, Ohio, a very small town. And my first hospitality job was for a historic hotel back there. Lafayette Hotel. I started as a banquet captain, or a banquet setup guy. You know, the guys that go in and set up all the banquet rooms. I'm sure, you know, tons of listeners have probably done it. But I did that for a couple of years, and it was just a job. It was fun. I had a friend that worked there, and I kind of got a little bit a taste of, you know, providing a customer experience and kind of taking care of somebody else in another setting, as opposed to just clocking into a job, doing a task, and then leaving. It was nice. No one in my family really has that experience, and it was nice to kind of get into that. I worked there for a couple of years, and then I joined the military for a year. I'm National Guard, so I've been at it for a while. And I was a helicopter mechanic. It was a lot of fun. And after that, I realized I didn't want people's lives to be on the line for my job. So I was going to go into aeronautical engineering. Said no, that was a little too much stress. You know, if you have a little bit of debris in your engine, it can cause the whole thing to wreck. So I just, you know, let's take a step back and do something that I'm not stressed out every day. So I went to food service, which isn't stressful at all, right? After I realized I had such a good time in hospitality, I decided to pursue that in college as well. So my goal was to manage every department in a hotel. So as a GM, I would have a really good understanding. You know, you don't ask someone to do a job that you're not able to do yourself, can't properly explain it, lead by example, all of that kind of thing. And that's what I really like. So I started off, you know, in a front desk. I worked housekeeping. I got stuck in the bar restaurant department for about 5 years. Just kind of got sucked into the bar lifestyle. Late nights, a lot of fun, you know, all that stuff, managing a bar. And then I got to a point where I just, all that clicked, and I got tired of it. And I got tired of the long nights with nothing to show for it, as it were. I wanted to kind of further my own situation, but it's hard in the bar and restaurant industry sometimes, because you're grinding so hard, and you get home and you got nothing left in the tank to do something else or kind of work on your own things, unless it's your day off. And sometimes in your day off, you need to lay on the couch and just recover sometimes. So I went to my GM and I was like, okay, I need another department. You know, I can't handle the bar life. And he's like, okay, how about cooking? I was like, cool. Never done it. Let's do it. So I started off as a salad cook, you know, cutting potatoes and making salads for the banquets, you know, just very rudimentary, you know, switched. I made half as much money going from a bartender to a line cook. I was waking up at 6:30 a.m. instead of going to bed at 4 a.m. But I kind of got this whole new energy and this whole new life. And I felt all of this new kind of stuff growing. I loved cooking. I really loved it. I loved the kitchen. I loved kind of controlling, planning, executing, knowing where everything's at, as opposed to a bar sometimes or a restaurant. It's okay, go, 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 go. Everybody just get ready. We're going to, you know, all hands on deck for the whole time. But in a kitchen and a banquet setting, which is where I started, yeah, you have a list. You know what time the event's going off. You know how many meals you need to prep. It was a great experience to start cooking. And I had a lot of really good chefs that I asked a lot of questions and they showed me. I was like, how do you do this? Okay. Hey, come over here. Let me show you. Hey, how do you do this? So I rose up and became banquet chef within like a year, I think maybe two. And I loved it. It was great. So the next thing was kitchen, the restaurant kitchen, you know, start working on the line, getting in the grit. And that's kind of where I came up with this guy is I was working at a Ramada on in Columbus, and we had one cooler for the whole line, and it was just packed. All you line cooks, you've seen the packed coolers, you've seen no space at all. And I was just really tired of it, you know, reaching in, grabbing stuff or stuff falling. So I had an epiphany one day, and my refrigerator at home has shelves on the inside of the door, but my commercial cooler had no shelves. And all I needed was a shelf space to store all my portion cups because they were just stacked on top of each other. It was a mess. So I had asked my one of my liquor reps for a bottle merchandiser, something you put on the inside that's customer facing of a glass door and carryouts, so you can get those little wine bottles. Typically, was what they were for. And that I just glued to the inside of a cooler door. It didn't rotate anything like this does, but it was a shelf and it was the start. And the wheels just started working, and I was amazed at how well that worked. And over the years, I've been working on this for 23 years. So it's just been going on and on. And while I'm working on that, I'm also trying to, you know, further my hospitality career, which was after I left, being a line cook, I became an executive chef at a really cool, trendy restaurant. I did that for like 11 years. It was great. I lived a block away from work. I walked to work every day. It was just epic. It was so much fun. And I got kind of burnt out after that from cooking. You know, getting being a chef, you're a teacher. You have to, hey, here's my recipes, gang. Let me show you how to cook it so it's the same every time. And that's your job. I mean, it's great. I love coming up with the new stuff, but if you can't get that consistency down of your product and what you're trying to get out there, then, you know, you're not doing your job properly, I feel. So I got kind of tired of doing that. Employee rotation, you know, common sense of employees sometimes isn't the best. And you know, trying to describe, you know, why you need to clean things or, you know, just, I'm sure we could have a whole other podcast on funny things we've heard in the kitchen. But I got kind of burnt out from that, and I switched to concession sales at Levy Restaurants. And I was a GM for Ohio State University for several years. And that was great. That was, you know, really kind of really got into the customer experience, you know, doing huge, huge events. Sometimes I'd have 800 employees under me for a huge event, you know, planning stuff for the football games. It was a lot. And it was great. I love hospitality. I've taken everything I've learned from that into my daily life. And, you know, rather than putting my experience and what I'm going through on other people, it's taught me to kind of internalize, put on a good face for the rest of the world where I'm not.
Okay, so you're at the University of Ohio State, which is one of the largest and most complex dining programs in the country. What was that like running food service at that large of a scale?
Great, great question. And that's a great, it's a great jump going from, you know, a small restaurant where you have one location to Ohio State, where we had 13 athletic facilities. And sometimes we would have a football game going on. And I remember one day we had a football game at home. So that's, you know, it's like 250,000 inside and outside. You're feeding, you know, you're providing an experience for it. Plus we had a wrestling match. Plus we had a Black Keys concert that night. And it's just, you know, I mean, you have to look 2 weeks in advance and you have to be planned and ready for that. You just have to be so you have to really plan. You have to have a great team. Yeah, you really have to departmentalize every aspect of it. I was in charge of the concessions, and there was two people in my position, and we would, you know, train the staff, go through and make sure that all of our staff leaders were stocking the stands properly. So you kind of, with concessions, it was a, the beautiful thing was you're able to stock the stand kind of, you can kind of get a couple of days of preparing your battle zone, essentially, for all your grab and go stuff. And then the stuff that you're cooking comes from a commissary kitchen, I'm sure you're aware of. And that just gets transported via the kitchen to the concession stand. Managing all of that with the kitchen staff, it's a lot more communication. It's a lot. You have to, with a large property like that, you can't change things immediately when you come in if you notice something wrong, because they have a system and there's so many moving parts to that system. You really have to understand and adopt their system before you can really find any faults to improve on it. So I was always told by a great GM I had, work your job for 3 months, then see what issues you find, then start making changes. You go in immediately, start making changes, you're going to screw everything up. People aren't going to be used to it. And you also have to earn the people's respect. Going from a kitchen, you've got 15, 30 employees, somewhere between there, to a stadium, you know, you got 60 people on staff every day that you need to have an answer for at all times. They're going to come to you. I call myself a firefighter. So whenever an event was going on, you know, there's no more planning, you're just reacting at that point. And I would just have an earbud and I would just walk around the whole event the whole time. Hey, I need you here. Hey, what do I do over here? So it's, you really have to put yourself in the customer, in the customer's point of view more so than a restaurant, and handle every aspect, because you're not going to get a chance to train your concession employees. And typically they're like nonprofit organizations that come in and staff it. They get a portion of the money for their organization, and then we get a portion. So you don't have to keep all these people on staff. That's kind of how a lot of that has worked. But you don't have the time to train them on customer service, on how to, you know, handle stuff. They're just, you know, they're working for their kids' cheerleading thing. They don't care. You know, they don't know about counting cups at the end of the day. They don't know about what temperature your hot dogs are supposed to be at. They don't know what happens when your register gives you an error code, 342 asterisk, whatever. So it's a lot more knowing everything. And that sounds daunting, but it really, you have to. And it kind of sucks a little bit on that, but having a good team, having good support, and even better communication, I think is, the higher up you go with larger facilities, all that stuff, all of the core stuff that, you know, is taught, you know, as leadership stuff, it just shows you why it's important. You know, you really need that path and, you know, safety net of support. So whenever you need something, you can ask for it. And whenever someone needs something from you, you can provide it.
So, okay, while you're there managing people, you know, it's got to be a lot different, obviously, as you said, in retrospect, to managing at the kitchen level. And what kind of leadership style do you really have in order to keep that many people in check and in line versus, you know, a regular kitchen where you might have a team of, you know, 5, 6, depending on how big the restaurant is? What are those big key differences that you noticed?
Leading by example, I think, was one of the biggest things. Not be cocky, but confident, when you're relaying information to your staff or whatever, making sure that when you're relaying it, that you know yourself, that's exactly what needs to happen. I didn't like having any authoritative air, because I always appreciated whenever an employee could come to me with an issue, that way I could handle it. I didn't want anyone to be afraid to come to me. Though you also have to have a little bit of an iron fist. I mean, if something's not right, even though we're buddies, I still got to tell you it's wrong and I still need you to redo it. Sorry, it's just the way it is. So removing kind of, hey, sorry about that, you know, kind of removing that out of the equation and trying to be buddy-buddy, just being a lot more factual. And it's a little more black and white when I ask you to do something. You know, did it get done? No? Okay, well, you need to go do it then. Thank you. Do you need help with that? Is there any questions I can answer for you? Being able to just have a better conversation with the employee while still understanding or making it known that, you know, that they do need to listen to you, that, you know, there's a lot going on and you can't afford to spend, you know, 20 minutes, you know, bullshitting with an employee that you're friends with or buddy-buddy with, or whatever. You know, we have friends in different levels of the equation and you don't want to be a jerk to them, but you still need to get the job done. There is a little bit of a camaraderie military aspect of it on a bigger picture, which I always enjoyed a lot because you're all going through it together. You all have to get through it together. You can dip out but then you're done and you're not going back to that family of work anymore. Your work family. Everyone loves their work family. Or you should. I mean, if you don't love your work family, get in the family. Yeah. One of the hardest things I learned to do starting, and now I'm extremely proficient at, is speaking in front of a large group of people. And that was difficult starting at Levy because I would do staff meetings, 50 people sometimes. I've got to go through, point out the whole timeline. I've got to point out when we're going to be expecting this. Key points to look out for, certain promotions we're running. And I've got to get all through so people absorb it, you know, so it's not just in a monotone voice. You know, and that was another thing, is simple things like just changing the pitch of your voice from, you know, don't just keep talking in the same. Just little things to engage people so you're, the points you're trying to get across, the things you need to have them do for you, the things that need to get done, do get done. Exactly how you need it to. Where's the kitchen? I mean, if move out of the way, just let me do it. You know, there's a lot of that. Okay, you didn't do the prep shit, I'm gonna do it. Okay, I'll stay late, I'll do it. You know, there's a lot of that. You don't have that option with a huge operation like that, because you know, you may need 7 stands that are down and you need those people to do their job exactly how they should, like they're trained, because there is a little bit of training that goes through all of that. But you need to be able to relay any, like I said, goes back to knowing everything. And it's tiresome, but you do have to be a guru of the stadium. I mean, truly, to me in that level.
Yeah. And I think you mentioned talking about public speaking and being able to speak in front of people. I think that's a lot more important than people would realize in the kitchen. Even though you may have a smaller team, to your point, if you want to continue to kind of take on something larger, do more, you're going to have to figure out how to be able to convey a message, to your point. Get the point across, let it sink in, and as you move on later in your career, you'll find that public speaking, when you can speak in front of a lot of people, it's a skill that's so, I know it's always mentioned in school and things of that nature, of public speaking is like the number one fear of all people, you know, more so than death or anything else. It's literally just getting in front of people. Did you kind of learn that on your own? Did you do any self-development to learn how to start to talk to larger groups of people, or did it just come naturally?
Kind of naturally. It was a lot of work. So I still get the butterflies. I mean, even before this, it's just you and me talking. I mean, I still get little butterflies in my stomach until I get rolling. Then I'm in the most comfortable place I want to be. A lot of it was, you know, I'm 6'5", so a lot of people will, hey, you know, I stand out. So a lot of people just naturally come to me. Hey, can you grab this? Hey, can you do this? Hey, can you do this? Sounds silly, but you know, a lot of people just come to me. So not being able to properly express yourself, you're right. It's a tremendous skill, no matter what position you're in. If you can't get your points across, if you can't speak what's on your mind just to have a conversation, or And I know all of our, it's tough sometimes. The words get tied up. It's happened to me a couple of times already. But just being able to just continue to move through at a steady pace and talk, a lot of it was trial by fire. It's like, okay, here's, get up there. You got to do it. Okay, there's 300 people you got to go talk in front of. Okay, I got to do it. So let's do it. You know, it's better to do the thing than worry about the thing. So just get it done. Worry about it later. Do it. If you mess up, hey, you know what? You can have another chance to do it better. And if you don't learn from your mistakes, I feel sorry for you because we all make mistakes and we all have to learn from them. So anytime
I was going to say, that's all you can do, right? Is you, all you can do is learn from your mistakes and move forward. And if you don't find the lesson in the mistake that you found, because a lot of people may not even realize that you made a mistake. You take it to be the most grandiose thing of, oh my gosh, I screwed up. I messed up my words. 90% of people aren't even going to know that that happened. But if you can take that and learn from it, then it's a win in my book. And I think you were kind of along the same lines of, if you can find the win in any situation, then it's a win.
It is. Yeah, it is. I mean, just push to get through, you know, I mean, make sure it's done right. Make sure it's done properly. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it's, hey, there, you got something, you know, you have to feed all these people. They're not going anywhere. You don't have any cooks. You don't have a dishwasher. Okay. Well, I guess I'm doing it then. You know, I mean, and that's fine. I mean, I think that's how you rise up through the levels. If that's your goal to get to a higher level in hospitality, especially, I mean, it's to be able to have the answers, to be able to get the job done, to be able to be the person people can depend upon. And that, I guess that's another thing I really liked about the industry was I liked being that person. I mean, I like being the person that people can depend on. I like having the answers. Not that I'm a know-it-all. I love to learn. Please tell me when I'm wrong so I can improve on myself. I mean, it's the best thing that could happen. But I do enjoy having the knowledge, being able to express it, and to help other people get through their task. I enjoy all of that. It was a great part of the industry. And I think a lot of people really thrive on that are in it.
Yeah. Do you think with everyone coming to you, did the pressure ever build up, get to you, as a lot of chefs it does, and they approach that peak burnout because they want to be everything for everybody? Did you ever experience that? And if you did, what was kind of your mechanism to keep yourself in check?
Yeah. Everyone's got a bad day. You know, it happens. You snap sometimes. You don't want to. I always say if I'm yelling, I'm wrong because I can't properly express myself. So, you know, if there was ever, and it was very few and far between, but if there was ever any issues where I felt like I was in the wrong yelling, I would always take, you know, all the people aside that were in the room or, you know, that I was talking to and, you know, okay, this is what I was going through. This is what happened. And this is what caused that, you know, being in a, you know, a long-term relationship too with a significant other, you know, you have to do that too. So you take all of that and it's all a learning. Sometimes when I would get home from work, I'd be like, I'm sorry, I can't talk. Like, I've talked too much today and I just need to, please just let me not talk. I mean, sometimes that happens and you need to decompress. I learned meditation a while ago and that has been tremendous. It's great. I recommend it for everybody. It's very difficult to do. You know, 5 minutes, you're still thinking of everything. It's fine. And find a way that you like it. There's tons of stuff out there. That was a way to get rid of, just let stuff go. You know, you're not building, you're not, oh, they're going to really make me mad today. There's none of that. You know, you have to learn to get rid of all of that. Every day is a new day. Approach it fresh and don't hold on to stuff. And then eventually, you do get burnout. My burnout was more of a boredom aspect of, I've kind of done everything I can here. What's next? You know, I don't really like being in a job where I'm just autopilot. You strive to get to the autopilot. Sometimes it's great. Some days you need an autopilot. Let me just turn off and just do my job, get through the day. But if you're doing that every day, for me, it just doesn't work personally. I need a lot more engagement. So I, you know, always working on stuff like this and, you know, just everything else. And, but that's why I would make the jump from position to position would be, okay, I realize that I'm getting too bored with this. I'm taking too much home. Let me get something else. There's no more of, you know, you get rid of all of that. It's all new, fresh, and you're learning, and you know, it's the best, you know, when you're learning new stuff and becoming better and knowing more things, you know, it's all part of it.
Yeah. Complacency will kill you. That's what I found, that I was the same as I would kind of master something or an area and it was no longer hard or challenging. It was almost as if I needed to change positions to find that challenge, to find where I can make a difference. Because as you said, the autopilot is, it's great some days where it's, you just come in, you do what you do and you go home. I don't, but it always felt like that there was a piece of something missing when I was on autopilot, that I wasn't giving something more that I could give. Because it was just on autopilot, even though that's how I perceived it. The rest of the world may not have, but that's just how I did. 100%. So, you know, you've gone from large volume, and now, you know, you have this idea that you've been working on for a long time with Rama King. What was the first prototype like? You know, you started with the asking the guy in the bar person, hey, can I get a inside rack just to try it? What was your actual first prototype like? Was it a disaster? I can only imagine just trying to create a product, what the beginning steps are like.
I should have got all of my prototypes out of storage for this. It would be great to hold all of each one. I've got 9 different prototypes, so it's a process. And I mean, starting a product, it's hard. I mean, where do you start? And that was weird. I'm like, okay, well, I've got this thing. We had it. I actually spoke to Cambro and Carlisle before they were absorbed by other people back in the day. Spoke to several people. I'm like, hey, I got this cool idea. Will you make it? Because I want to buy it. I would love to have this thing. I literally gave them this idea 20 years ago, and they're like, no, thanks. We're good. It's like, okay, well, I'm going to do it then. It was really tricky. Just starting out with it and not having, you know, and this was 23 years ago. I've been working on this. So the internet's, I didn't have a cell phone when I started this. So I didn't have the internet in my hand. You know, you have a home computer. I was always big into that and always looking up stuff. But it's information isn't as readily available. So it took a lot more work back then. So we started with a patent search, and just to see what was out there existing. And we found that there was a couple things out there that we wouldn't infringe upon. But the very first prototype, aside from that thing, was a three, what was it? I think it was a 3-inch PVC tube from Home Depot that I got. I put a cut down the middle and I glued a little thing, plastic thing that I fabricated, and it rattled around. It wouldn't fit in a cooler, but just to get a physical, something I could hold that had my idea. Like, this is it. This is what I want to build off of. This is starting the idea. I didn't have a 3D print. They weren't even on that. So anything we would have to make would have had to have been mold injection or some sort of plastic mold of some kind. So we started with that PVC thing as just a placeholder. And then we went to, we found a plexiglass manager. So at that point, we just start, who is in plastic? We know we want to make it in plastic. So you find the material of whatever you're making it out of, speak to the people that work in those industries, tell them what you have, and then you listen to their advice on, yes, you should use this material for these reasons, and don't use these materials for these reasons. So you speak to the people that are the experts, and finding out information on that are, we've always had, or actually our first pro, or I think the second or third one, the plexiglass one was great. He was kind of a friend. I forget how we met him, but plexiglass It's bullet resistant, so we didn't need it that strong. I mean, a prototype and that was like $150. So strong. I still have it hanging up back here. It's really cool. It works great. That model does not have any moving parts. It was just a single tube attached to a spine, and I used that model in as a chef. So that one I would actually put up, and it would work. The whole device would work. We realized we had to go to plastic, like this kind of thing. So we started, we got with a local plastic manufacturer. He's 3 miles from my front door. So if there's ever an issue, I can go see it. I can go help him. It's great. Oh, we're so happy to be with him. Olay Plastics, they're wonderful. We just kept working on the design a little bit before we had like, there would be like a before we figured out how to get, it so strong, there would be like a little bridge piece in between here. And then we figured out we wanted them to nest. So we added this little thing. So the more times we did a prototype, the more things we were able to be like, oh, this would be cool if we just changed this and, just change this. And it's like cooking or painting. Sometimes you just gotta know when to stop. So, okay, we're done. This is it. Okay, yeah, there might be something else we can improve on this, but it's to the point where it solves all of our problems. It's strong, it's resistant to everything, it's not going to fall down. It checks all of our boxes to where we can provide a good product without worrying about people complaining about the how it's made or if it's cheap. We want it to feel strong, or it's a restaurant, it's going to get beat up. I mean, I know the guys and women that are going to use this. Bless their hearts, they try, but they're not, I mean, they're gonna beat it up, and we want to make sure it's resistant to everything. And I've kept every single prototype, and I look back on it sometimes. It's hilarious. I mean, it's where you go and you realize all the money you've wasted on some things, but if you didn't waste it on that or try that, then you wouldn't know you were wrong. And okay, I know I'm not doing that. I know I'm not doing that. And suddenly you have all these things that you're not doing. The process of elimination becomes really easy at that point. You're like, okay, this is how we're doing it then, because A through Z are wrong, so we're going to do plan A1, and that's it. And it works. And through trial and error, research and development, getting a lot of people's feedback, because you and your partners and people you show it to, A, your family and friends become very tired of hearing about all this. They love you, they're proud of you, but they're done. They're like, tell me when it's out. But I, they've all been incredibly supportive. I love all of them dearly. They've been so just proud of me. And it makes that, not to keep on going, but that telling other people about your product and everything and seeing their inspiration or, just them being happy for you makes you want to try even harder. Not really to not let them down, but that's almost fuel for the fire. It's like, hey, these people believe in me. I must be doing all right. Let's keep going. Let's move forward. This, yeah, it's tough. Yeah, it's expensive. Yeah, and all the time, but everyone believes in this thing. You're gonna keep going. You're gonna make it happen. And it's just baby steps at the end of the day. Every day you gotta do baby steps, and your product, it comes out.
Yeah, what was the kind of turning point that you knew operators would actually adopt it? Obviously, you knew it was something that was needed and would solve a problem, but what was the actual point in which you're like, okay, people realize the value of this. We need to go all in and actually continue. Because a lot of products get somewhat developed, but they never actually launch.
Yeah, lots. And not everything's made out there. A lot of people like, oh, that's probably already been invented. I mean, there's still a lot of stuff to little lot of stuff to invent. One of the big things was actually, taking a prototype and putting it in my cooler and using it rather than just, okay, I've got this idea. When I actually saw it used and I could do this, I just started laughing hysterically because like, oh my God, this is amazing. I love it. That was tremendous just seeing it work. And you had this idea and okay, you keep working. Okay, it's gonna work. You still have a little bit of, maybe the door won't close, or maybe it'll break, or maybe, something will happen, and maybe, something silly. And it when you actually see it work, and then cherry on top, we launched at the National Restaurant Association trade show. 2023 is our first kind of, you know, we have been doing research and development with local on restaurateurs, people in our network. Hey, here's a ramekin. Try it out. Let us know what you think, kind of thing. We did that with a lot of people. At the NRA show, everybody walking by, just they look at it and they're like, what? And then the light bulb goes off. They're like, oh my God. They're like, why didn't I think of this? And if I had a nickel, I mean, everybody's like, oh, you know, I mean, they see it and then they see it, you know, they're like, what is that? And oh shit, why didn't I think of it? And it's, you know, I'm not tooting the horn. It's a Porsche Cup dispenser, you know, it's nothing. It's just what it is. But it's just a simple idea to prove the fact that there are very simple ways to improve a process without, you know, getting too in the weeds with it or making it too crazy, you know, making it simple for everybody to use. You know, non-English speaking people, we put in kitchens, instantly they get it. They're like, oh, yeah, great, more. You know, I mean, seeing everybody at the NRA show, National Restaurant Association, seeing everybody there and their reaction, that's what it was like. Yeah, this can really work. To an extent, that was almost a false positive because, you know, you get all that feedback. Yeah, we're millionaires right now. You know what I mean? You got to still sell it. I mean, you still have to tell people it's a new product. You're not selling a new chicken tender. You're not selling a new Windex that they can just swap out with something else. This is a new system. Beautiful thing is it takes up a space no one else is using. You're not using the inside of your cooler door because there's nothing that goes on the inside of your cooler door. Or you can put on a wall space. And you don't have to change your cups. If you use at least cups like the pre-filled, you know, those, it works great. If you're using the, you know, dark cups, that nest or flat, it all works great. So you don't change anything that you're doing. You make it easy for the end user. As many people can use it as possible. Okay. Yeah.
No, it's sometimes less is more, and the simple things and simple ideas are what actually are needed, because too many things get overcomplicated and then it becomes too hard to actually execute because it is too difficult. What advice do you give someone who, you know, sees an inefficiency as you did in the industry, but doesn't even know where to start to turning that idea or thought inefficiency into an actual product?
Great question. I was hoping to actually ask that because it's tough. Brainstorming. I think that brainstorming, either if you don't have a partner that or someone that you can brainstorm with, that, you know, even yourself, just start jotting down ideas. Seeing the process. Say you're trying to, you know, eliminate cross-contamination in your cooler or something with the ready-to-eat stuff above the raw stuff or vice versa. And, you know, maybe sketching out on paper exactly the problem area, highlighting the areas that need to change, and then start thinking about, okay, perfect world, what happens? What is going to be the process? What's the product? What's the solve here? What makes this into a situation that is not only easy to navigate through, but also implementable? You know, if you have something like, okay, this is great. I have a 27-stage plan to reduce the amount of Windex we use. Okay, that's not efficient. You know, coming up with something, sketching. I'm a note taker. I take a lot of notes every day. I always keep a notepad in my pocket, something, jotting down notes. You see something, especially if you're trying to solve a problem, if you're trying to make your work area better, or if you just like to, you know, if that's a passion and you like to solve problems, finding the best way that, or finding the thing that affects the most people that can improve their time at work, that improve their life, reduce time. It's all time saving stuff. That's the most important thing. If your product is adding time to a task, it's wrong. You need to be solving, you need to be saving time. And reaching out to industry professionals. I have spoken to this about this to, I don't know how many people, everybody I've come in contact with. You'd be surprised at how many people, A, would love to help you, B, know somebody that can help you, or C, just like to listen and offer some feedback too. Oh, I never thought of that. Thank you for telling me. Just getting your passion out there and letting the world know about it. You know, you don't have to be on socials, you know, 24/7 promoting your thing. It's very difficult. We do all of our socials in-house. It's very exhausting. It's part of it. You know, it's the best way to tell the world about your product. So you have to be proficient in that as well. When you're in the brainstorming process, it's realizing everything that you're going to need to do by the end. And if you're not proficient in that, get a partner. You know, get somebody that can help you in the process. There's going to be plenty of money to be made for this. So the more people that help get it out there, the easier it is, becomes for everybody. And at that point, it's quicker. It gets out there faster and becomes a thing in the world. Yeah, quicker. So say 20
times. Yeah, no. And I know you've got a thousand different other ideas. You're always thinking, you're always doing. But right now, maybe looking in the future, or if you could create another product to solve common kitchen headache, what could that be?
That's great. Great question. Talking about new kitchen inventions, it's great. I love seeing all this new innovation and stuff, and partnering up with other innovators. And that's probably been one of the most energetic and revitalizing things of this 2-decade-long process, is working with other people like yourself and other people in the industry that are releasing a service, releasing a product that's brand new, that's getting out there, and hearing their story and hearing their energy and hearing and sharing your wins and everything. And that, I mean, getting to find your people, essentially. And then that really is where you find your people, is whenever you find your passion and your passions line up with the same thing, and you can talk for 5 days straight and listen for 5 days straight about each other's thing and just love every second of it. We partner with a lot of people that have new inventions out there that are doing great things. You talk to tons of people that are doing great, new awesome things out there. Okay, actually, here. One thing that we were looking at with this guy, actually, is a way to automate filling of the portion cups. So if there is a process, and I actually have, we have a couple prototypes out there. Not prototypes, but drawings, ideas. But a way to almost create an assembly line without giving too much away, to empty a product, like a gallon container of ranch dressing or whatever that you need to portion cups, a way to put it upside down, let it drain out into something, and all of those go into these. So we're working on that right now. A problem solver, something where you remove someone from a task that's very remedial, but necessary. You know, like our buddy Evan, who's got the Civil War rule. I mean, a perfect example, you know, just something that has a product. Let me save you some time. Let me automate this. You go do something else. Everybody wins. So yeah, portion cup filler. That's my next thing.
Awesome. Awesome. I know we could go on, and I want to give you a chance to talk about real quick the LinkedIn group, because you talked about finding your people and the group that you started on LinkedIn. I think it's an incredible group that is going to allow people with like minds to have those conversations, to prop each other up. So maybe give some love to the LinkedIn group and a little bit about what you're doing there.
Awesome. I love it. It's one of my most favorite things I've ever done. It's so exciting. So this whole thing was born from looking on Instagram and finding other people with new inventions, something I hadn't seen. And I came across the Grill Advantage. Highly recommend everyone go check it out. It's awesome. And the guy, George, has a great social media, and he had so many likes and so many followers. I'm like, oh my God, I'm struggling to get 20 views on my stuff, 20 likes. You know, it's tough. You want to get visibility. And so he had such a personable, you know, he seemed very personable. So I sent him a message and I was like, hey man, love the product. I've got something similar in the same space. We're not competing at all, but whoever you're selling to, I'm probably am too. Let's talk, you know? And we had a conversation. We talked on the phone for like 2 hours. It was awesome. Just totally re-energized me in this whole thing. Just, there are other people out there, you know, there are other people out there like me that just are doing good things. They want to help. They're energetic. They're passionate. So I just got to thinking more and more about it and you know, being around your people. So I started a private LinkedIn group, and it's just for us. And whatever you post on there, it doesn't go to anywhere else. But, you know, LinkedIn's the best way to find professionals. And, you know, I mean, you're not on Facebook or Instagram. You're concerned about your career, and that's what we all are. So anybody with a hospitality or healthcare service or product that's innovative, new to the industry, I look for. And because, like I said, their clients are my clients. They're the same people. We're in the same space, but not competing. So I think there's 23 members right now. And we share client lists. It's amazing. We've all gone, not all of us, but a lot of us have gone to trade shows, and we just straight up give each other the client lists we get. We get, what I like to say is we don't have to do cold calling anymore. Now we get warm introductions, because people may have a client, a chain client, and we're experiencing that right now. It's tremendous. And other people in the group are working together and making huge deals and getting into great places. And all it takes is like, oh yeah, I work for Roosters. Let me freaking introduce you to the head of their culinary development. Oh my God, I've been trying to get in touch with them for years. And you do a 5-minute email. It's all it takes. And all of a sudden you've opened up a huge door to somebody. It's cost you nothing. You're helping somebody else. And everybody rises up together. I charge nothing. There's no requirements. It's, you know, you have a conversation with somebody, you get to feel if they're a good person. I've talked with everybody in the group. We're all good people. I mean, we want to hold the door open for each other. You know, I mean, there's enough money to be made. You don't have to make it all. Let's help each other out. Let's get up there. You know what I mean? The more people together, and then all of us rising at the same time, we can do some awesome, really good things for others. So I call it the Global Nova Group, Global Innovation, just, you know, and hopefully when we get some more members, actively searching for more members, we will change it to like I've thought about the International Association for Healthcare and Hospitality, something really long and sounds awesome. And, you know, just something that sounds a lot more legit, but it's a great start. It's people like you and me, man. I mean, we can text each other. Hey, I just had this win. Your stuff looks awesome. It's, you know, we're liking, we're sharing just little stuff like that. And going back to friends and family being tired of hearing about your product, like I said, wouldn't be here without them. They are the saints in our lives that help us get to where we are. But, you know, they don't need to hear every day about your product. But the people in the group love hearing about that stuff. So it gives you another outlet to talk about it. And like, hey, I just heard from this so-and-so. You know, whereas your friends and family would be like, cool, man, what does that mean? Other people in the industry would be like, oh my God, that's amazing. And then that eventually opens a door for them. So, you know, it may seem selfish, but in a way, cheering for other people and helping them, you help yourself. Truly. I mean, and who doesn't want to be around a bunch of good people that are, you know, eager to help each other? I mean, it's a good way to be. I mean, it's a way that everyone in the group is, and it's how we want to continue. And we have a really good mission statement. I wish I had in front of me, but a snippet of it is we collaborate, we don't compete, because we choose to. You know, we're choosing to collaborate, not competing. We're choosing to help each other. We're making a definitive choice to do better by other people. And I, you know, crazy world, everyone, yeah, that one might be a little better.
Yeah, high tides raise all ships. That's the old adage and saying. Why not help out others? And you hit a really funny point of family, friends, they're great. They usually start, but it's almost like even at the end of the day, They have no idea what goes on in this industry, and not
Right,
that they don't
yeah.
care, but it's just it's almost a foreign language to them of,
Totally.
oh, that's what you do. Okay, I kind of try and understanding what you're doing. We all kind of geek out though with different kitchen innovations and things that are going on in the industry, and it is nice to talk to a group of people that are like-minded and all want have success as the best
Yeah.
interest. So it's been a really cool group to actually join and be a part of. So
Yeah, so
keep
happy.
rocking
So
that
happy.
out.
Yeah.
Yeah, want to be respectful of your time. Where do people go? They want to learn about what you're doing. You're always doing something. You're always commenting, posting. You're a true hustler. But where do all the people go? Socials, et cetera, to find you and find products, more about Ram King, et cetera.
They go to ramaking.com. Just go there. All of our socials are on there. Where to buy it's on there. We're in anywhere you can buy hospitality stuff is where we're at. Try to be just any. We try to make it easy for you to buy our products. You can buy it on the site, buy it Amazon, Webstaurant, Cisco, Supplies on the Fly, freaking everywhere. Go to ramaking.com. Our social media is ramakingdom. So we're creating a little kingdom of, we love the alliteration and the play on words is always fun for us. It's a fun product, trying to create a fun, it's not all serious, trying to make things a little better. But ramaking.com, reach out to me, anybody, please feel free. I'm on LinkedIn all the time. And thanks so much, Jeff. This has been awesome, and really appreciate the venue to get the word out there, and really love the show. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's been awesome. I love talking to you. You're always, as I said, passionate, vibrant, ready to go, to hustle, to get things done. I will link the group, well, maybe not the group, but I'll link your LinkedIn, and if people are
Yeah.
interested in that group, reach out to Mike. As he said, it's a very good, intimate group to support each other in this industry. So again, Mike, thanks so much. Visit Ram King. The product is as simple as it could be, but it could be a huge time saver for you and for your location. It's that easy. It's that easy.
All day, all day.
Come on, guys. All day. I love it. Okay, so until next time, we'll catch y'all on the sunny side.
HospitalityChain.com, the world's first online hub designed for the hospitality, culinary, and catering industry. From leading food and beverage brands to professional food service equipment, HospitalityChain.com makes sourcing simple. Search, select, buy direct, and save all in one global marketplace.